Some longer shots. There are yet other ways in which evidence for string theory might be found. For example, Witten has pointed out the long shot possibility that astronomers might one day see a direct signature of string theory in the data they collect from observing the heavens. As encountered in Chapter 6, the size of a string is typically the Planck length, but strings that are more energetic can grow substantially larger. The energy of the Big Bang, in fact, would have been high enough to produce a few macroscopically large strings that, through cosmic expansion, might have grown to astronomical scales. We can imagine that now, or sometime in the future, a string of this sort might sweep across the night sky, leaving an unmistakable and measurable imprint on data collected by astronomers, such as a small shift in the cosmic microwave background temperature, see Chapter 14. As Witten says, although somewhat fanciful, this is my favorite scenario for confirming string theory, as nothing would settle the issue quite as dramatically as seeing a string in a telescope. Closer to Earth, there are other possible experimental signatures of string theory that have been put forward. Here are five examples. First, we do not know if neutrinos are just very light, or if in fact they are exactly massless. According to the standard model, they are massless, but not for any particularly deep reason. A challenge to string theory is to provide a compelling explanation of present and future neutrino data, especially if experiments ultimately show that neutrinos do have a tiny but non-zero mass. Second, there are certain hypothetical processes that are forbidden by the standard model, but that may be allowed by string theory. Among these are the possible disintegration of the proton. Don't worry, such disintegration, if true, would happen very slowly. And the possible transmutations and decays of various combinations of quarks in violation of certain long-established properties of point particle quantum field theory. These kinds of processes are especially interesting because their absence from conventional theory makes them sensitive signals of physics that cannot be accounted for without invoking new theoretical principles. If observed, any one of these processes would provide fertile ground for string theory to offer an explanation. Third, for certain choices of the Calabi-Yau shape, there are particular patterns of string vibration that can effectively contribute new, tiny, long-range force fields. Should the effects of any such new forces be discovered, they might well reflect some of the new physics of string theory. Fourth, as we note in the next chapter, astronomers have collected evidence that our galaxy, and possibly the whole of the universe, is immersed in a bath of dark matter, the identity of which has yet to be determined. Through its many possible patterns of resonant vibration, string theory suggests a number of candidates for the dark matter. The verdict on these candidates must await future experimental results establishing the detailed properties of the dark matter. And finally, a fifth possible means of connecting string theory to observations involves the cosmological constant. Remember, as discussed in Chapter 3, this is the modification Einstein temporarily imposed on his original equations of general relativity to ensure a static universe. Although the subsequent discovery that the universe is expanding led Einstein to retract the modification, physicists have since realized that there is no explanation for why the cosmological constant should be zero. In fact, the cosmological constant can be interpreted as a kind of overall energy stored in the vacuum of space, and hence its value should be theoretically calculable and experimentally measurable. But to date, such calculations and measurements lead to a colossal mismatch. Observations show that the cosmological constant is either zero, as Einstein ultimately suggested, or quite small. Calculations indicate that quantum mechanical fluctuations in the vacuum of empty space tend to generate a non-zero cosmological constant whose value is some 120 orders of magnitude, a 1 followed by 120 zeros, larger than experiment allows. This presents a wonderful challenge and opportunity for string theorists. Can calculations in string theory improve on this mismatch and explain why the cosmological constant is zero, or if experiments do ultimately establish that its value is small but non-zero, can string theory provide an explanation? Should string theorists be able to rise to this challenge, as yet they have not, it would provide a compelling piece of evidence in support of the theory. An appraisal. The history of physics is filled with ideas that, when first presented, seem completely untestable, but, through various unforeseen developments, were ultimately brought within the realm of experimental verifiability. The notion that matter is made of atoms, Pauli's hypothesis that there are ghostly neutrino particles, and the possibility that the heavens are dotted with neutron stars and black holes are three prominent ideas of precisely this sort, ideas that we now embrace fully but that, at their inception, seemed more like musings of science fiction than aspects of science fact. The motivation for introducing string theory is at least as compelling as any of these three ideas. In fact, string theory has been hailed as the most important and exciting development in theoretical physics since the discovery of quantum mechanics. This comparison is particularly apt because the history of quantum mechanics teaches us that revolutions in physics can easily take many decades to reach maturity. And compared to today's string theorists, the physicists working out quantum mechanics had a great advantage. Quantum mechanics, even when only partially formulated, could make direct contact with experimental results. Even so, it took close to 30 years for the logical structure of quantum mechanics to be worked out, and about another 20 years to incorporate special relativity fully into the theory. We are now incorporating general relativity, a far more challenging task, and, moreover, one that makes contact with experiment much more difficult. Unlike those who worked out quantum theory, today's string theorists do not have the shining light of nature, through detailed experimental results, to guide them from one step to the next. This means that it's conceivable that one or more generations of physicists will devote their lives to the investigation and development of string theory without getting a shred of experimental feedback. The substantial number of physicists the world over who are vigorously pursuing string theory know that they are taking a risk, that a lifetime of effort might result in an inconclusive outcome. Undoubtedly, significant theoretical progress will continue, but will it be sufficient to overcome present hurdles and yield definitive, experimentally testable predictions? Will the indirect tests we have discussed above result in a true smoking gun for string theory? These questions are of central concern to all string theorists, but they are also questions about which nothing can really be said. Only the passage of time will reveal the answers. The beautiful simplicity of string theory, the way in which it tames the conflict between gravity and quantum mechanics, its ability to unify all of nature's ingredients, and its potential of limitless predictive power all serve to provide rich inspiration that makes the risk worth taking. These lofty considerations have been continually reinforced by the ability of string theory to uncover remarkably new physical characteristics of a string-based universe, characteristics that reveal a subtle and deep coherence in the workings of nature. In the language introduced above, many of these are generic features that, regardless of currently unknown details, will be basic properties of a universe built of strings. Of these, the most astonishing have had a profound effect on our ever-evolving understanding of space and time. Part 4. String Theory and the Fabric of Space-Time. Chapter 10. Quantum Geometry. In the course of about a decade, Einstein single-handedly overthrew the centuries-old Newtonian framework and gave the world a radically new and demonstrably deeper understanding of gravity. It does not take much to get experts and non-experts alike to gush over the sheer brilliance and monumental originality of Einstein's accomplishment in fashioning general relativity. Nevertheless, we should not lose sight of the favorable historical circumstances that strongly contributed to Einstein's success. Foremost among these are the 19th century mathematical insights of George Bernard Riemann that firmly established the geometrical apparatus for describing curved spaces of arbitrary dimension. In his famous 1854 inaugural lecture at the University of Göttingen, Riemann broke the chains of flat-space Euclidean thought and paved the way for a democratic mathematical treatment of geometry on all varieties of curved surfaces. It is Riemann's insights that provide the mathematics for quantitatively analyzing warped spaces. Einstein's genius lay in recognizing that this body of mathematics was tailor-made for implementing his new view of the gravitational force. He boldly declared that the mathematics of Riemann's geometry aligns perfectly with the physics of gravity. But now, a century after Einstein's tour de force, string theory gives us a quantum mechanical description of gravity that, by necessity, modifies general relativity when the distances involved become as short as the Planck length. Since Riemannian geometry is the mathematical core of general relativity, this means that it too must be modified in order to reflect faithfully the new short-distance physics of string theory. Whereas general relativity asserts that the curved properties of the universe are described by Riemannian geometry, string theory asserts that this is true only if we examine the fabric of the universe on large enough scales. On scales as small as the Planck length, a new kind of geometry must emerge, one that aligns with the new physics of string theory. This new geometrical framework is called quantum geometry. Unlike the case of Riemannian geometry, there is no ready-made geometrical opus sitting on some mathematician's shelf that string theorists can adopt and put in the service of quantum geometry. Instead, physicists and mathematicians are now vigorously studying string theory and, little by little, piecing together a new branch of physics and mathematics. Although the full story has yet to be written, these investigations have already uncovered many new geometrical properties of space-time entailed by string theory, properties that would almost certainly have thrilled even Einstein. The heart of Riemannian geometry. If you jump on a trampoline, the weight of your body causes it to warp by stretching its elastic fibers. This stretching is most severe right under your body and becomes less noticeable toward the trampoline's edge. You can imagine this clearly if a familiar image such as the Mona Lisa is painted on the trampoline. When the trampoline is not supporting any weight, the Mona Lisa looks normal. But when you stand on the trampoline, the image of the Mona Lisa becomes distorted, especially the part directly under your body. This example cuts to the heart of Riemann's mathematical framework for describing warped shapes. Riemann, building on earlier insights of the mathematicians Carl Friedrich Gauss, Nikolai Lobachevsky, Janosz Bolyai, and others, showed that a careful analysis of the distances between all locations on or in an object provides a means of quantifying the extent of its curvature. Roughly speaking, the greater the non-uniform stretching, the greater the deviation from the distance relations on a flat shape, the greater the curvature of the object. For example, the trampoline is most significantly stretched right under your body, and therefore the distance relations between points in this area are most severely distorted. This region of the trampoline, therefore, has the largest amount of curvature, in line with what you expect, since this is where the Mona Lisa suffers the greatest distortion. Einstein adopted Riemann's mathematical discoveries by giving them a precise physical interpretation. He showed, as we discussed in Chapter 3, that the curvature of space-time embodies the gravitational force. But let's now think about this interpretation a little more closely. Mathematically, the curvature of space-time, like the curvature of the trampoline, reflects the distorted distance relations between its points. Physically, the gravitational force felt by an object is a direct reflection of this distortion. In fact, by making the object smaller and smaller, the physics and the mathematics align ever more precisely as we get closer and closer to physically realizing the abstract mathematical concept of a point. But string theory limits how precisely Riemann's geometrical formalism can be realized by the physics of gravity, because there is a limit to how small we can make any object. Once you get down to strings, you can't go any further. The traditional notion of a point particle does not exist in string theory, an essential element in its ability to give us a quantum theory of gravity. This concretely shows us that Riemann's geometrical framework, which relies fundamentally upon distances between points, is modified on ultramicroscopic scales by string theory. This observation has a very small effect on ordinary macroscopic applications of general relativity. In cosmological studies, for example, physicists routinely model whole galaxies as if they are points, since their size, in relation to the whole of the universe, is extremely tiny. For this reason, implementing Riemann's geometrical framework in this crude manner proves to be a very accurate approximation, as evidenced by the success of general relativity in a cosmological context. But in the ultramicroscopic realm, the extended nature of the string ensures that Riemann's geometry simply will not be the right mathematical formalism. Instead, as we will now see, it must be replaced by the quantum geometry of string theory, leading to dramatically new and unexpected properties. A cosmological playground. According to the Big Bang model of cosmology, the whole of the universe violently emerged from a singular cosmic explosion some 15 or so billion years ago. Today, as originally discovered by Hubble, we can see that the debris from this explosion, in the form of many billions of galaxies, is still streaming outward. The universe is expanding. We do not know whether this cosmic growth will continue forever, or if there will come a time when the expansion slows to a halt and then reverses itself, leading to a cosmic implosion. Astronomers and astrophysicists are trying to settle this question experimentally, since the answer turns on something that in principle can be measured, the average density of matter in the universe. If the average matter density exceeds a so-called critical density of about 1/100 of a billionth of a billionth of a billionth, 10 to the minus 29th power, of a gram per cubic centimeter, about 5 hydrogen atoms for every cubic meter of the universe, then a large enough gravitational force will permeate the cosmos to halt and reverse the expansion. If the average matter density is less than the critical value, the gravitational attraction will be too weak to stop the expansion, which will continue forever. Based upon your own observations of the world, you might think that the average mass density of the universe greatly exceeds the critical value. But bear in mind that matter, like money, tends to clump. Using the average mass density of the Earth, or the solar system, or even the Milky Way galaxy as an indicator for that of the whole universe would be like using Bill Gates' net worth as an indicator of the average Earthling's finances. Just as there are many people whose net worth pales in comparison to that of Bill Gates, thereby diminishing the average enormously, there is a lot of nearly empty space between the galaxies that drastically lowers the overall average matter density. By carefully studying the distribution of galaxies throughout space, astronomers can get a pretty good handle on the average amount of visible matter in the universe. This turns out to be significantly less than the critical value. But there is strong evidence of both theoretical and experimental origin that the universe is permeated with dark matter. This is matter that does not participate in the processes of nuclear fusion that powers stars and hence does not give off light. It is therefore invisible to the astronomer's telescope. No one has figured out the identity of the dark matter, let alone the precise amount that exists. The fate of our presently expanding universe, therefore, is as yet unclear. Just for argument's sake, let's assume that the mass density does exceed the critical value, and that someday in the distant future the expansion will stop and the universe will begin to collapse upon itself. All galaxies will start to approach one another slowly, and then as time goes by, their speed of approach will increase until they rush together at blinding speed. You need to picture the whole of the universe squeezing together into an ever-shrinking cosmic mass. As in Chapter 3, from a maximum size of many billions of light years, the universe will shrink to millions of light years, every moment gaining speed as everything is crushed together to the size of a single galaxy, then to the size of a single star, a planet, and down to the size of an orange, a pea, a grain of sand, and further, according to general relativity, to the size of a molecule, an atom, and in a final inexorable cosmic crunch, to no size at all. According to conventional theory, the universe began with a bang from an initial state of zero size, and if it has enough mass, it will end with a crunch to a similar state of ultimate cosmic compression. But when the distance scales involved are around the Planck length, or less, quantum mechanics invalidates the equations of general relativity, as we are now well aware. We must instead make use of string theory. And so, whereas Einstein's general relativity allows the geometrical form of the universe to get arbitrarily small, in exactly the same way that the mathematics of Riemannian geometry allows an abstract shape to take on as small a size as the intellect can imagine, we are led to ask how string theory modifies the picture. As we shall now see, there is evidence that string theory once again sets a lower limit to physically accessible distance scales and, in a remarkably novel way, proclaims that the universe cannot be squeezed to a size shorter than the Planck length in any of its spatial dimensions. Based on the familiarity you now have with string theory, you might be tempted to hazard a guess as to how this comes about. After all, you might argue that no matter how many points you pile on top of each other, point particles, that is, their combined volume is still zero. By contrast, if these particles are really strings, collapsed together in completely random orientations, they will fill out a non-zero-sized blob, roughly like a Planck-sized ball of entangled rubber bands. If you made this argument, you would be on the right track, but you would be missing significant, subtle features that string theory elegantly employs to suggest a minimum size to the universe. These features serve to emphasize, in a concrete manner, the new stringy physics that comes into play and its resultant impact on the geometry of spacetime. To explain these important aspects, let's first call upon an example that pares away extraneous details without sacrificing the new physics. Instead of considering all 10 of the spacetime dimensions of string theory, or even the 4 extended spacetime dimensions we are familiar with, let's go back to the garden hose universe. We originally introduced this 2 spatial dimension universe in Chapter 8 in a pre-string context to explain aspects of Kaluza's and Klein's insights in the 1920s. Let's now use it as a cosmological playground to explore the properties of string theory in a simple setting. We will shortly use the insights we gain to better understand all of the spatial dimensions string theory requires. Toward this end, we imagine that the circular dimension of the garden hose universe starts out nice and plump, but then shrinks to shorter and shorter size, approaching the form of Lineland, a simplified, partial version of the Big Crunch. The question we seek to answer is whether the geometrical and physical properties of this cosmic collapse have features that markedly differ between a universe based on strings and one based on point particles. The essential new feature. We do not have to search far to find the essential new string physics. A point particle moving in this two-dimensional universe can execute these kinds of motion. It can move along the extended dimension of the garden hose, it can move along the curled-up part of the garden hose, or any combination of the two. A loop of string can undergo similar motion, with one difference being that it oscillates as it moves around on the surface. This is a distinction we have already discussed in some detail, The oscillations of the string imbue it with characteristics such as mass and force charges. Although a crucial aspect of string theory, this is not our present focus, since we already understand its physical implications. Instead, our present interest is in another difference between point particle and string motion, a difference directly dependent on the shape of the space through which the string is moving. Since the string is an extended object, there is another possible configuration beyond those already mentioned. It can wrap around, lasso, so to speak, the circular part of the garden hose universe. The string will continue to slide around and oscillate, but it will do so in this extended configuration. In fact, the string can wrap around the circular part of the space any number of times, and again will execute oscillatory motion as it slides around. When a string is in such a wrapped configuration, we say that it is in a winding mode of motion. Clearly, being in a winding mode is a possibility inherent to strings. There is no point particle counterpart. We now seek to understand the implications of this qualitatively new kind of string motion on the string itself, as well as on the geometrical properties of the dimension it wraps. The physics of wound strings. Throughout our previous discussion of string motion, we have focused on unwound strings. Strings that wrap around a circular component of space share almost all of the same properties as the strings we have studied. Their oscillations, just as those of their unwound counterparts, contribute strongly to their observed properties. The essential difference is that a wrapped string has a minimum mass, determined by the size of the circular dimension and the number of times it wraps around. The string's oscillatory motion determines a contribution in excess of this minimum. It is not difficult to understand the origin of this minimum mass. A wound string has a minimum length determined by the circumference of the circular dimension and the number of times the string encircles it. The minimum length of a string determines its minimum mass. The longer this length, the greater the mass, since there is more of it. Since the circumference of a circle is proportional to its radius, the minimum winding mode masses are proportional to the radius of the circle being wrapped. By using Einstein's E equals mc squared, relating mass to energy, we can also say that the energy bound in a wound string is proportional to the radius of the circular dimension. Unwrapped strings also have a tiny minimum length, since if they didn't, we would be back in the realm of point particles. The same reasoning might lead to the conclusion that even unwrapped strings have a minuscule yet non-zero minimum mass. In a sense, this is true, but the quantum mechanical effects encountered in Chapter 6, remember The Price is Right again, are able to exactly cancel this contribution to the mass. This is how, we recall, unwrapped strings can yield the zero-mass photon, graviton, and the other massless or near-massless particles, for example. Wrapped strings are different in this regard. How does the existence of wrapped string configurations affect the geometrical properties of the dimension around which the strings wind? The answer, first recognized in 1984 by the Japanese physicists Keiji Kikawa and Masami Yamasaki, is bizarre and remarkable. Let's consider the last cataclysmic stages of our variant on the Big Crunch in the garden hose universe. As the radius of the circular dimension shrinks to the Planck length and, in the mold of general relativity, continues to shrink to yet smaller lengths, string theory insists upon a radical reinterpretation of what actually happens. String theory claims that all physical processes in the garden hose universe, in which the radius of the circular dimension is shorter than the Planck length and is decreasing, are absolutely identical to physical processes in which the circular dimension is longer than the Planck length and increasing. This means that as the circular dimension tries to collapse through the Planck length and head toward ever smaller size, its attempts are made futile by string theory, which turns the tables on geometry. String theory shows that this evolution can be rephrased, exactly reinterpreted, as the circular dimension shrinking down to the Planck length and then proceeding to expand. String theory rewrites the laws of short-distance geometry so that what previously appeared to be complete cosmic collapse is now seen to be a cosmic bounce. The circular dimension can shrink to the Planck length, but because of the winding modes, attempts to shrink further actually result in expansion. Let's see why. The spectrum of string states. The new possibility of wound string configurations implies that the energy of a string in the garden hose universe comes from two sources: vibrational motion and winding energy. From the legacy of Kaluza and Klein, each depends on the geometry of the hose, that is, on the radius of its curled-up circular component, but with a distinctly stringy twist since point particles cannot wrap around dimensions. Our first task, then, will be to determine precisely how the winding and vibrational contributions to the energy of a string depend on the size of the circular dimension. For this purpose, it proves convenient to separate the vibrational motion of strings into two categories, uniform and ordinary vibrations. Ordinary vibrations refer to the usual oscillations we have discussed repeatedly. Uniform vibrations refer to even simpler motion, the overall motion of string as it slides from one position to another without changing its shape. All string motion is a combination of sliding and oscillating, of uniform and ordinary vibrations. But for the present discussion, it is easier to separate them in this manner. In fact, the ordinary vibrations will not play a central part in our reasoning, and we will therefore include their effects only after we have finished giving the gist of the argument. Here are the two essential observations. First, uniform vibrational excitations of a string have energies that are inversely proportional to the radius of the circular dimension. This is a direct consequence of the quantum mechanical uncertainty principle. A smaller radius more strictly confines a string and therefore, through quantum mechanical claustrophobia, increases the amount of energy in its motion. So, as the radius of the circular dimension decreases, the energy of motion of the string necessarily increases, the hallmark feature of an inverse proportionality. Second, as found in the preceding section, the winding mode energies are directly, not inversely, proportional to the radius. Remember, this is because the minimum length of wound strings, and hence their minimum energy, is proportional to the radius. These two observations establish that large values of the radius imply large winding energies and small vibration energies, whereas small values of the radius imply small winding energies and large vibration energies. This leads us to the key fact: for any large circular radius of the garden hose universe, there is a corresponding small circular radius for which the winding energies of strings in the former universe equal the vibration energies of strings in the latter, and vibration energies of strings in the former equal winding energies of strings in the latter. As physical properties are sensitive to the total energy of a string configuration, and not to how the energy is divided between vibration and winding contributions, there is no physical distinction between these geometrically distinct forms for the garden hose universe. And so, strangely enough, string theory claims that there is no difference whatsoever between a fat garden hose universe and a thin one. It's a cosmic hedging of bets, somewhat akin to what you, as a smart investor, should do if faced with the following puzzle. Imagine you learn that the fate of two stocks trading on Wall Street, say, a company making fitness machines and a company making heart bypass valves, are inextricably connected. They each closed trading today, valued at $1 per share, and you are told by a reliable source that if one company's stock goes up, the others will go down, and vice versa. Moreover, your source, who is completely trustworthy, but whose guidance might be crossing over legal boundaries, tells you that the next day's closing prices of these two companies are absolutely certain to be inversely related to one another. That is, if one stock closes at $2 per share, the other will close at 1/2, 50 cents, per share. If one stock closes at $10 per share, the other will close at 1/10, 10 cents, per share, and so on. But the one thing your source can't tell you is which stock will close high and which will close low. What do you do?